This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The impeachment investigation and hearings have dominated headlines and airtime for weeks. This morning, Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the House will be moving forward with articles of impeachment. President Donald Trump is accused of abusing the power of the presidency by requiring the Ukrainian government to investigate his political adversaries in exchange for critical aid and other political favors. The president is also accused of obstruction of justice, for trying to conceal his involvement in Ukraine, and for advising federal employees to break the law by defying congressional subpoenas. Wisconsin U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has been at the center of these investigations. Johnson was one of the first people notified about President Trump's alleged request to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Senator Johnson is also a potential juror and says he will not recuse himself from the impeachment hearing, despite his involvement. He joins me now by phone. Well, Senator Johnson, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Happy to be on the show.
So I think, like some Wisconsinites, I was listening to the impeachment hearing when I started to hear my senator's name mentioned quite a lot, which was both exciting and a little bit of an uh-oh moment. So take me back a bit. When did Ambassador Sondland first talk to you about the Trump administration's seemingly unusual request to Ukrainian President Zelensky?
Well, let me go back just a little bit further and talk about my involvement in Ukraine. It really started within a couple of months of my becoming United States Senator in 2011, and it was my first congressional delegation where we went to Georgia, Ukraine, and the Baltic states. And then that was followed up as I got in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I became chairman, first ranking member, then chairman of the European Subcommittee. So I've made numerous trips, I think six over to Ukraine. Certainly witnessed the Maidan, 100 Ukrainians slaughtered in their quest for freedom. So I think Americans ought to have an affinity for the people of Ukraine. They're trying to shed the legacy of Soviet corruption, that type of thing. I got involved with Ambassador Sondland first during his confirmation, came before my subcommittee, and obviously was first passed out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And then as Ukraine is going through the elections, former President Poroshenko lost in just a landslide victory for President Zelensky. 73% of Ukrainians voted for a complete political neophyte in President Zelensky, basically with the mandate to rid the country of corruption. And so they called the inauguration very short notice. I was the only member of Congress that could rearrange my schedule to get there. I thought it was pretty important that we had representation from Congress. Ambassador Sondland was there. Kurt Volker was there. Secretary Perry was head of the administrative delegation. So we met with President Zelensky. We met with a number of his future advisors, and we came away from that meeting thoroughly convinced that President Zelensky was a real deal. He understood that this election wasn't about him. It was really about the mandate to rid Ukraine of corruption. So we felt he's dedicated to doing that. And so Ambassador Sondland thought it was important that we meet directly with the president, which we did a couple days later in the Oval Office, the four of us, and to really encourage the president to get fully behind supporting the people of Ukraine, their new president, offer Oval Office visit, appoint an ambassador that could get strong bipartisan support to, again, a further signal of strong support for Ukraine. And I think I was certainly surprised, I shouldn't speak for the other ones, at President Trump's reaction. But my point has been his reaction has been incredibly consistent. It literally starts with, what a corrupt place it is. I think Kurt Volker has some paraphrased quotes of the president, which pretty well describes what the president's viewpoint was, as well as President Trump's longstanding beef that Europe just does not do enough for its own defense and certainly wasn't stepping up the plate adequately in terms of support for Ukraine. So that's kind of where the whole involvement with the Ambassador Sondland. I thought Ambassador Sondland was really trying to do the right thing and encourage the president to support Ukraine, and I supported his efforts there.
But Ambassador Sondland did say that he thought there were some real issues with President Trump's conversation with President Zelensky.
I'm not so sure that was his testimony. He certainly understood, as we all understood, that we had a real sales job to do with President Trump. President Trump had legitimate concerns. I mean, everybody recognized the issue of corruption in Ukraine. And when you're the the head guy, when you're the president of the United States and you're looking at spending or releasing hundreds of millions of dollars of hard-earned taxpayer, American taxpayer money, you really should satisfy yourself that this is a country that's going to move beyond that corruption. And one of the points I kept making, and I don't think it's made enough, this is toward the tail end of the fiscal year. That money still hadn't been spent. I still haven't found out why. You know, we had, this administration had provided the Javelin missiles, which were still in place. They fortunately hadn't been used. So those Javelin missiles were still there as a deterrent for further Russian aggression with their tanks. So to me, and this is what I conveyed to President Zelensky when we're in Ukraine, let's try and minimize this hold. Let's talk about it as being a year-end fiscal issue. And we've got Senator Murphy, who's part of the appropriations process. I came back and talked to Senator Durbin, who's also on the Appropriation Committee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, let's not blow this into a big deal. We want to show our support for Ukraine. Let's not show a division. Let's just talk about, well, if the president decides not to release the hold, we'll make sure that Congress restores that funding and gives the president no flexibility. So this was being taken care of. Between branches within the branch, it's unfortunate it's blown into a whole impeachment battle.
Well, Senator Johnson, the vast majority of the corruption that you're talking about, it seemed to happen about 4 years ago. Why is this coming up now? Why is this coming up in 2019?
Well, first of all, no, the corruption is pretty much endemic. And again, I want to a certain
but
extent, he,
the,
President Zelensky.
The issue with Burisma, that's something that came up in 2015. And that's what's been cited continuously, including in the phone call that Donald Trump, President Trump, had with President Zelensky.
Well, what drives me nuts, and this is coming from somebody who really is investigating this and taking everything I hear from everybody with a big grain of salt, okay? There are a lot of unanswered questions. And when I hear members of the media or folks on the other side say, well, that's all debunked. Well, there's certain aspects that have been debunked. But also when they say, well, there's no evidence of that. Well, there's no evidence because people literally have not done a real serious deep dive and done the kind of investigation.
When
for
you
example,
say,
as what they've undertaken against President Trump.
Johnson, I don't know exactly what you're talking about right now.
Oh, well,
when you say they're not investigating, what are they not investigating?
Sure. Well, for example, there is, and this does, you know, I've known about this document for quite some time, but there's a file document, contemporaneous memo to the file. A week after the new prosecutor general took over for Shokin, the one that was fired on behest of Vice President Biden, it's a memo about a meeting with Burisma, Hunter Biden's American legal team that set up a meeting with the new acting prosecutor general, and says the purpose of the meeting was to apologize for the false information spread by U.S. representatives against Shokin, the former prosecutor general. Now, Burisma, I've seen the 13-page document that lays out the case to start an investigation. They're talking about Burisma basically being a conduit for laundering money from Russian interests. So there's a lot of corruption.
So you believe this is Russian corruption?
Well, there's no illegality there. For them to say there was no wrongdoing, I would just say, well, do you think it was right for Hunter Biden to take a board position in a company that was suspect in a country that is known to be corrupt when his father was the vice president and had the portfolio for Ukraine? I mean, I think on its face, that doesn't seem like the right thing to do. I certainly wouldn't let my son do that.
Well, I suppose. So I'm going to take a step back. You've said, you know, Americans, quote, we solve our political differences at the ballot box, not in the streets or through impeachment. But this impeachment process, it's laid out in the Constitution for cases of this kind where the president is accused of high crimes and misdemeanors. And let's not, you know, mince words here. He is accused of some very serious things. So are you criticizing the Constitution with this criticism of impeachment?
No, I think what I would criticize is the low level of the bar being set in terms of what's going to be considered an impeachable offense. And the fact that I don't think this ever should have been raised as an issue. I have real questions about how this whole whistleblower complaint came into being.
Do you have an issue with whistleblowers more generally?
No, absolutely not. I defend them. I'm shocked at how much retaliation there is against whistleblowers. So I'm chairman of the committee, oversight committee of the Senate. We rely on whistleblowers. So I want strong whistleblower protections, but because I am aware of a number of whistleblowers, you know, they're not all created equal. Some have personal and political axe to grind. And by the way, there is no guarantee of anonymity with whistleblowers. There's just a guarantee that they can't be retaliated against. In fact, the whistleblower statutes contemplate if an accused wants to call a whistleblower for in his defense, they'll have the right to do that. So there's no reason to keep this whistleblower's, continue to be anonymous, because he's not anonymous. Everybody knows who he is.
Well, in unmasking this whistleblower, aren't you opening them up to some real threats? A lot of the people who have testified have been threatened.
No, I don't believe that. First of all, I haven't unmasked him. Okay, others have. I mean, the name is widely known. There's a charade going on, like we don't know who the whistleblower is. I think we do. No, let's face it, this whistleblower will be celebrated just like Professor Blasey Ford was celebrated. I don't think there's any...
She has also received a number of death threats. Well, she's had to have security with her. This gets to another point here. It seems like whenever anybody speaks out against the Trump administration, against what he's doing, or even just contradicts his timeline, they're subject to a number of threats, not just from the public at large, but seemingly in some cases the president himself.
Well, first of all, it's a horrible place that our politics are in today, where that's just true across the board. Okay, I've had my own share of death threats. There were death threats lodged to people like Leah Vukmir and other members of the Wisconsin state legislature during Act 10. So that's a very regrettable state that our politics are in, but it occurs on both sides. It's unfortunately the nature of the beast right now, and I deplore it. But that's part of the thing I'm trying to speak out against, is this strong division in our country where people are just talking by each other. Whether you would acknowledge it or not, I will tell you the conservatives view the press as highly biased, that this president is not getting a fair shake, and that is part of the reason why the country stays divided. If we had a more unbiased, a more even-handed press, you may not have quite the same issue. So I know members of the press don't like hearing that, and they won't admit to it, but that is one of the divisions. It's one of the reasons that conservatives continue to support the president, and their support is even growing because they think this president has been treated unfairly. Take a look at the attorney for the whistleblower 10 days after the inauguration is tweeting using terms like coup, rebellion,
Senator
and impeachment
will
follow ultimately.
Senator Johnson, I understand that you have some issues with the media at large, but at the same time, especially local media, which I am, I'm talking to your constituents, but I'm also one of your constituents. We have to keep our politicians accountable. And often when we see these things that you or the president have taken issue with, these are articles that are just pointing out that what he said or what someone said isn't accurate, that it's not true.
But how do we
keep people accountable?
So what I say, the bias in the media is revealed. And by the way, I'm very accessible. I try and have as good a relationship with the media. We need a free press. It's vital. But an unbiased free press would even be better. But the bias in the media is revealed far more often in what they don't report, what they're not curious about, versus the sometimes very overt bias in what they do. And it's one of the reasons I think President Trump was talking about Biden. He'd just gone through a special counsel investigation on a completely false charge of collusion between his campaign and Russia. And he looks at that, and there are questions. Was there any kind of DNC involvement with actors in Ukraine? Could have that been part of what caused him to get a special counsel? He was just asking, I think, any human being who'd gone through that torment, you've given me a special counsel. You investigated everything I've done. Why don't you look at what Vice President Biden did? I mean, to me, that's just kind of a human reaction. And now we're impeaching somebody on the basis of what I consider a very sympathetic human reaction.
Well, he conditioned a number of things on these investigations. He conditioned critical aid to Ukraine, a country who you believe the United States should actively, vociferously support.
So when I asked the president about that before my trip on September 5th, I talked to him on August 31st. He was, again, very consistent. The reason he was looking at this was because corruption in Europe's not stepping up the plate. I'm the one that raised the issue. Is there some arrangement that, if Ukraine does something, you'll provide, you'll lift the hold? And he vehemently, angrily, adamantly denied that.
Toward the tail end,
well, they didn't even know about the holdback. I don't think there was a holdback there in July. Let me finish. At the tail end of my conversation on August 31st, the president wrapped it up saying, Ron, I got to deal with the hurricane, but I hear what you're saying. We're reviewing it right now. I think you're going to like my decision. So on August 31st, it was already under review. He was already leaning toward releasing that hold. He released the hold on September 11th, and there was no conditions placed on it. He released it. So, again, I understand how the press is putting the worst possible construction on everything. This has been blown way out of proportion. It never should have risen to an impeachment trial. Sausage-making process of foreign policymaking
Senator Johnson,
have to be revealed.
That gets back to this point. You're considered a fact witness in this trial, but you also have said that you intend to be a juror. Now, in any other courtroom, that would be considered incredibly unethical. Why do you believe it's ethical for you to act as both a juror and a fact witness in this case?
Do you know how many fact witnesses might the other senators be?
Why would it be ethical for them to be there either?
Because this is not a jury trial. This is a political process. I'm a United States senator, and the people that elected me deserve representation in this process. They deserve my voice. They deserve my vote.
Don't they also deserve
a fair trial?
There's
absolutely nothing unethical about it. I wonder how many members of the press has asked Senator Murphy whether he's going to recuse himself, because he's also a fact witness, because he's with me meeting with Zelensky. No, he should not. He should not recuse himself.
Why?
Because it's not a jury trial. It's not the same type of thing.
Not as ethical as a jury trial. I don't understand why it's more ethical.
This is a political process. This is not an Article III trial. It's a political process.
Does that speak to whether or not it's ethical?
There is nothing unethical about me having knowledge of something. And by the way, a lot of senators have knowledge about what's happening with Ukraine and the funding and everything else. But there's nothing unethical about me being potentially a fact witness, and I've already provided what I know, and then actually sitting in the Senate as one of the senators that will decide to vote whether to impeach us, to convict this president or not. There's nothing unethical about that at all.
It's in no way a conflict of interest in your mind.
No.
Okay. Well, Senator Johnson, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, happy to do so. Have a great day.
Republican Ron Johnson is the senior U.S. Senator for Wisconsin. He's a member of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations and the chairman of the Subcommittee on Europe and Regional Security Cooperation. He is also a member of the Senate's Ukraine Caucus. You can find more of NPR's impeachment coverage at WUWM.com.